So my name's actually pronounced Urgle, kind of like Gurgle without the first G. Hello, everyone. My name's Chris Urgle. I'm from Columbia, South Carolina in the United States. I do apologize if I'm a little less lucid than usual. I think I picked up a little stomach bug on the way here, but I will try to be, provide as much information as possible and answer as many questions as possible. I see you have a pretty full audience, so I assume everyone here is using Notre Dame, right? Now, so this question, or this whole class, is about whether to use ODA or not. How many of you are actually interested in ODA? Everyone? Okay. Quiet audience. So, thank you for turning that light off. So, the whole question behind ODA, to me, is whether you should use it or not, and that really depends on the kind of apps you build and the kind of infrastructures you have. So I really want to go kind of down a list of the kind of apps you may build. And the first one we'll start off with is the monolithic application. You know, the gigantic application, the I Do Everything app. How many of you guys have that in your enterprise? Several. Afraid to admit it, right? You may have it connecting to a database, and you know, it's okay to have this monolithic app. Sometimes you just have to get something out there, I understand. But yeah, I know somebody's like, oh, no. But eventually we're going to go down and separate our concerns out. And whenever we do that, we'll typically go with like a web application, maybe separate it out into like a model view controller. Or maybe we have a WPF application and go with model view view model. And we'll separate things out even further into our business layers and our data access layers. And by the way, like I said, MVC is just one example. We do have MVVM, Model View Presenter, many other types of separation of concern patterns out there. When we have a layered application, we typically have our presentation layer, our business layer, our data access layer, and we have cross-cutting concerns. So in a presentation layer, you'll see your model views and controllers type of patterns. I guess I'll go off on a little aside here. My original slide deck, or in a different slide deck actually, I did have view model listed up there. View models in an MVC pattern are more like an aggregate model. Our business layer, we may have our entities, our components, and our workflows. And our data access layers, we have our components, and we have gateways of different services. And if you're not familiar with cross-cutting concerns, those are going to be things like security, logging, the things that you're going to have across your entire application. So when we get to the enterprise, we'll usually have many different types of applications. We have our Windows apps, the public services, console applications, web applications, and behind the scenes, we're going to have business services. We may have data services, may not have data services. We'll have workflow orchestration services. There may be all kinds of services out there. We'll have databases behind the scenes. You probably also have these crazy Excel documents or access databases that your accountants have built that no one's ever told you about. This is probably the way your enterprise ecosystem actually looks. It's probably very crazy. You most likely don't know everything that's out there. Haven't been getting too many hands raised so far, but how many of you actually work in a large enterprise? Okay, pretty good number. And then there's probably several of you working in small shops or doing consulting work, building those small little monolithic applications, or maybe you actually are breaking them out into MVC apps. Okay. So whenever we're going into the enterprise type of applications, you're really going to start seeing a service-oriented architecture form, or actually more like a service-oriented infrastructure. Service-oriented architecture is a set of guidelines to apply to your services. And we're going to be going with things like a standardized contract. We want to make sure that everything's standardized, and that's going to be typical in your applications as well. You don't want to have methods named like retrieve and get. When they mean pretty much the same type of thing. We're also going to have loose coupling. Again, something you would typically see in your applications. Abstraction, you want to hide things with encapsulation, that sort of thing. You don't want to make everything completely concrete. And we want our services to be reusable. The other thing is that most of the time they should be autonomous, but I oftentimes see that isn't the case, and it may not be the case, particularly when you have things like orchestration services that are mashing up with other services out there and moving resources around. Then there's the whole statelessness thing. We shouldn't be saving things out, or we shouldn't be maintaining standard of service because it can get into a bad state and crash the entire system. When you make a call, it makes that call, and it returns the information, and that's it. And your services should be discoverable. And the whole composability goes back again to mashing up, being able to create your applications within your enterprise. So, this whole thing really comes down to, instead of being Hamlet or Shakespeare, you know, from Shakespeare, you know, to the Odea or not to the Odea, but to be more of Dickens, A Tale of Two Cities, which is RPC versus REST, which is what I'm going to primarily be discussing now. And that is whether your services should be operation-based or whether they should be resource-based. Now, I meant for this talk to be more of a chalk talk or to actually have a discussion, so I really do hope that you guys have some questions for me. But let's get started with the REST. What is REST? Do you guys have a good understanding of what REST is now? By now? Okay. In that case, I am going to go off into a little tiny demo. REST. I like to think of explaining REST in terms of the way the web used to be, because REST really is an architectural style describing the web. That was actually described in a dissertation by Roy Fielding, and he is one of the inventors of the HTTP protocol. So we've kind of gone away from what the web was, and now we're kind of going back. Things go in cyclical motions. The best way to illustrate it, before I go show a little tiny demo, is think back when the web first came into being, back in the early to mid-90s. You would browse out to a website to search for a book. You'd find some great novel, and you'd want to share it with your friends. So you would copy the URL and just control paste. You'd go open up your email client. You'd send that URL to your friend, and then they would click the URL, and it'd take them to the same web page. Somewhere along the way, us Windows developers got a hold of the web. We wanted the web to be more like our Windows. We wanted it to be very stateful. And what happened was we would go search for these books. It would store cookies on our machines. And whenever we copied the URL to show our friend this great new book that we found, they would click the URL and ask them for a login. And then they would log in, and then it would take them to the homepage. So to describe REST, I really like to show MVC versus non-MVC. So this is a very small little demo application. She's an ASP.NET MVC. Hopefully it'll run. Okay. There we go. The root URL is on the screen. We don't have any of these default ASPXs. I click on products. I'm taken to a product screen. This represents a resource in the system, by the way. I see a list of products right here. I click details on this one product, and I get product/details/680. So I can copy this URL, give it to someone else, they can go to it, and it's going to take them to the same place. It's very RESTful. And out of the box, ASP.NET MVC is very RESTful. You can make it very not RESTful if you want to. It takes a little bit of work. So the other style of application is our non-REST app. And I am going to run this. I'm using standard ASP.NET. I just have a simple little box on the screen. You can barely see it here. I'm going to type in "Hello Antwerp." Press the button, and it takes us to the stateful form.aspx. So what's going to happen if I copy that stateful form, give it to my friend? Well, you don't know. I mean, really, you have no clue. That could be storing that information in a database and retrieving it. There's no telling where it's putting it. It's not very RESTful. So let's look at what's actually happening here. And that's inside my default.aspx. I'm actually storing textbox1.txt inside my session. And then I'm redirecting to the stateful form. Then my stateful form is setting it on the label. If it's null, it's going to write string.empty. Otherwise, it's going to write session text to string. So obviously, very, very contrived demo. But it shows that if you start storing things in session and expect to retrieve the information, it doesn't really represent that particular piece of information. You're just storing it for later use, particularly for that particular user. Now, in the context of services, we're usually talking about operations versus REST. So I want to call a method, RPC-style method, rather than calling a resource. But let's not get off track. Let's talk about REST. And like I said before, it's an architectural style. And it's also based upon resources. The other thing is I have on here is that it's stateless. That is not exactly true. Whereas everybody talks about how stateless the web is or how stateless REST is, actually the resource represents the state. So that's one thing to keep in mind. If I update the resource, I've updated the state of that resource. So REST isn't truly stateless. It's only stateless in the context I'm not storing things off beyond the resource. So what can be a resource? Anyone? Well, as we've seen, websites or web pages can be resources. Documents can be resources. Like Word documents, Excel files, PDFs. Whenever you're on the World Wide Web, you click on things, you download PDFs, oftentimes. Another thing that can be a resource is data, employee data, product data, other types of relational data. So that brings us to another set of guidelines. And that's with our resource-oriented architecture. And what I want to talk about with the resource-oriented architecture is that it's a little different than a resource-oriented infrastructure. And this, is like SOA, which is a set of guidelines to tell you how you should create your REST services. We should expose many URIs. Every resource should have a URI, or a URL, as you're probably used to hearing. We shouldn't be setting cookies representing IDs. And we can have aggregate resources. That's okay, but they must be represented with the URI again. And as I've stated beforehand, or over and over, we should be able to copy and the URI, paste it into an email, send it off to a friend. Now, how many people have heard of ODEA by now? It's been around for a little while. Okay, pretty good number. ODEA is the open, Open Data Protocol. And it's REST-based. And it can return several different content types, AMP, PUB, JSON, and XML. There is a point of contention among some people whether it's rest-based. As you'll see, it actually does fit into the whole resource-oriented architecture guidelines. And I think that it works best when you're working with relational data sources. Now, I don't have a demo built for this one particular thing. However, there is a new toolkit, or there's a toolkit called the WCF Data Services Toolkit that allows you to plug OData with almost everything out there. It's basically like a little handy utility for creating data services. So the typical data services that you'll, or data providers you'll see, data services, or WCF data services, WCF RIA services, and SharePoint. There are many, many other data services available, public data services available on the web if you want to grab a hold of them, Netflix, Facebook. But let's discuss the way our infrastructure works in the enterprise. We'll have our applications up. We'll usually have our service-oriented infrastructure up. And we're going to have things kind of segregated off into resources. But OData is only a piece of those resources. Like I said, OData is best represented with relational data. OData doesn't really work as well if, say, you have a bunch of PDF files. OData is better for data, isn't so good for other types of resources you may have out there. So I don't think it is a solution to fit everything. On the other hand, I do believe that there are many operation-based services that exist that could be better represented as resources. I tend to see many services that say, get this, post that. And inside of HTTP, we already have get, put, post, and delete. So there really isn't an imperative to create these WCF-style services, operation-style services with WCF if the only thing you're doing are CRUD-based operations. Now, there are some operations that you may need to actually put into a service. So again, resource-based services don't meet everything. On the very extreme end, I guess you would have a complete resource-oriented infrastructure that it consists of resources and orchestration. Again, you're never going to be able to get away completely from operations. You need something to be able to orchestrate the collaboration between different resources. Different data, workflows, and that sort of thing. The workflows themselves could be represented as resources. So let's talk about, let's go back to our layered application. We have our presentation layer, we have our business layer, and we have our data access layer. There are things that we can identify that break apart into services. For those of you who actually haven't thought about implementing a service infrastructure already, we can break this apart and take our workflows out, our components out, and put them into a separate set of services. OData really fits best under the DAO set of components. And I suppose on the very extreme end, you may be able to figure out how to do some of the other ones. Those are the three I'd really recommend hitting. Okay, so let's see what I've got here. So I discussed some of the differences between whether you should be using operation-based services or REST-based services. I really want to show you outside of the context where most people talk about OData and show you where OData can shine. OData can really shine as data access because that's what it is. It is a data service. And most people put data services up on the web. It can also act great behind the scenes to control access to your data. If, for example, how many of you actually have developers that write queries directly against the database? How many of them have brought the database to a halt with their queries? Yay. Yeah, I knew that. That does happen. Some developers are really good. Not all developers are great at writing queries. And then the SQL guys get on to us and they're like, well, since we can't trust you with the data, we're going to lock everything down behind stored procedures. This is the only way you can get access to this data, period. But that restricts our ability to interact with the data. That restricts our ability to be creative and come up with unique solutions. Sometimes that is more performant. But I'm a true believer in the type of thing that you shouldn't refactor for performance immediately. You build first and then find your areas that aren't performant. So let's take a look at what I have here. I'm going to run this application. So I want to show you how to take an existing application and start utilizing data services in it. That is very slow. Okay. Let me add an appropriate reference. And then... No, that's actually correct. Let's try running it again. There we go. I have the AdventureWorks Cycles application here. And we're going against the AdventureWorks database. It's an MVC application. And it is running very slow on my machine for some reason. So we'll forget the pretty part of the demo and go straight to talking about the code. So I don't want to wait for that to come up. So in this example, I actually have a straight MVC application. And it has a set of entities. The entities are set up in EDMX. That isn't the actual set of entities for this application. Our actual entities that we're using is the domain. Inside our domain, we have our product model, we have product photos, we have everything that this application needs to use, product categories, and so on. These are POGOs. Now, as I said before, this is an MVC application. And one of the things I've done is I've made sure that whenever we pull up, say, products, that we're going to be pulling our information out of our product repository. This is one of those things I was speaking about before, about making sure that you've actually refactored into a layered application, because we don't really want our controller accessing the database directly, or even accessing the entity model directly. It impedes our ability to test. It impedes our ability to change our provider's strategy pattern. Impedes our ability to change strategies. So, what we have here is we actually have our domain. Inside our domain, we've actually set up the interfaces for the repositories. In this case, I have a product repository. And I'm getting things like get feature products, get top 100 products, get products by ID. The repository are the concrete repositories actually set up inside the main.ini framework. Inside the main.ini framework, I have my project repository, and it is accessing the AdventureWorks entities, where I have actually set up an EDMX model for the AdventureWorks database. So we can take a look at this. In this case, I have a one-to-one connection. Now, whenever you set up an EDMX model, when you set up anything like this, you should really go through and rename everything, because your database names are not going to be the same names that you typically use in your application. In this case, I do have product categories, but they should most likely be named categories. So now that we're I've kind of explained what's going on here. Whenever this controller, product controller, is going to call our product repository, it's going to get products by category, and it doesn't really know where this repository is coming from. It's using MEF, and there's a great session, I believe, later on about MEF from Glenn Block. So it's getting the products from the repository, and we can actually provide it any number of repositories we want to. We can change the strategy. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a data service. Data services are the original OData, before it was known as OData. You probably remember the name Astoria. It then became ADO.NET Data Services, and then everything was rebranded to WCF. So there's WCF Data Services and several other WCF products out there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add new project. And if you ever want to create a data service, you need to add a web project. It can exist in the MVC project as well. But for simplicity's sake, I'm just going to add an empty web project. I'll call it AdventureWorks.DataService. Okay. Now that I have the data service set up, I am going to add new item. And it's, excuse me, now that I have the web project set up, I'm going to add a new item. I'll set up a WCF data service. I'm going to rename this as AdventureWorks. Okay, so we have several items here. First of all, this is taking a generic parameter, and it wants us to put something here. So this is specs in entity model. Use the WCF Data Services toolkit that I talked about if you want to set up a different method of doing this. However, it will work with any other standard data model out there, or excuse me, entity data model out there. So in this case, I need to go and set a reference back to my entities, and that's why I have it separate out in a different assembly, because I knew I'd be sharing it between projects. And the first thing I need to do is add my using clause. And AdventureWorks Entities is from our EDMX. This is our class name. Okay. And by default, everything's locked down. This is Data Services. So we need to go down here and go to Config and change this to open it back up. Now, we can set access rules for any entity set inside of that inside of the entities. So an entity set, if we go back over to our entities, entity set is any one of these. It is the actual name of this. Actually, it's going to be the name of the set, which is any set. In this case, it would be Transaction History Archives. So we're going to have a name for the entity, a name for the entity set, and we need to put our set name inside of here. Now, if you want to be very simplistic about it, because you're doing this internally, or because you're exposing this to the web and you don't care, you can put star. Yeah, be very careful about that. Because if you put star and you put all, any set writes dot all, then that means anyone can write to your database. I'm just saying. So we can allow people to read, we can allow them to write. Kind of curious how that works without reading. Write delete, write merge, write replace. All right, we can add operations to a data service as well, since not everything fits cleanly into a resource-based behavior. The important thing to keep in mind with this is that you should only allow people to return a certain number of results per collection. And this is simply to prevent someone from pulling back your entire database at one time. Imagine someone, this is one of those things with the developers who write their own queries, right? A developer comes in, writes a query, pulls back a million rows. Next thing you know, your database is ground to a halt. We're not going to worry about that at the moment. Okay. Let's run this. See how it looks. Oh. And then one other thing you need to remember to do is put a connection inside the web.config file. It's an important thing to remember. My connection is set up in the entities file, since this is all put together in the same solution. I'm going to copy that and put it directly inside the web.config. Okay, we have our directory listing. I'm going to click on the service. And we're getting all of our entities back in the AtomPub format. AtomPub format is a more expressive form of XML. Think of it like when you read a blog. Blogs come back. They have data that describes certain pieces. Someone's taking a picture. They have data that describes certain pieces. In this case, we have data describing the title, different collections that are underneath there, underneath the service. I am going to go to one of these collections. We can go to any of them, actually. Let's go to product categories. And if you notice, it says collection href down below. That's letting us know we have a hyperlink reference that we can actually browse to it. And now we're inside our product categories collection. And down here again, we see that we have a hyperlink reference to a particular category. I can go to one category, and I can pull it up. Let's see, I have product subcategories. Let's grab that. Trust me, I am going somewhere with this. Product subcategories one. And then I can go to 1. And then I can go to slash products, because it will have products. Okay, so if I've gone to product categories, product subcategories 1, now I've gone to products. The thing is that products has a link back to the product subcategories 1. Ooh, no, it did not. Let me make sure I have that right. Oh, I guess we need to go to a particular product. Let's go to product 771. Okay. So product 771 is going to have a link back to, should have a link back to its product subcategory. Okay, so we've gone back to product subcategory 1. And then this lets you get into an infinite loop, where I can just keep going over and over and over. I think that could be really bad for crawlers unless they actually take a look at the ID up here. So, can anyone tell me what soap has to describe the surface? Four letters. Whistle. Yes. Soap has whistles to describe the surface. And luckily, we do have something to describe the surface inside ODAI as well. And that is metadata. Whenever we want to describe metadata, we're going to use the dollar mark. So, if you look at this, you'll see that we're getting back an EDMX, just like we have with our Entity Framework. And anyone who truly wants to be able to reconstruct this can read the read the metadata to see what is contained within the service itself. So, if I go back to product categories 1, we'll find that we actually have other metadata that we can use as well, because I can go to slash name and get the bikes. Okay, that's great. However, that's really, really long. The only thing I wanted was the name of the category. I can provide provide the metadata using a query string, or ask for the metadata, in this case, the value of that. Did I do that right? Oh, I am typing that in wrong. Okay, type that in wrong. I won't forget about that for now so I can move on. Did I really do that? Okay, my mind's going blank on me. Okay, so forget about the value for the moment, but you can retrieve the value back. I'll post that up later. That's very simple to do, but it's just a piece of metadata. Makes me wonder how much else I'm going to forget here. Let's move on to how to actually consume this, because there are many other things you can put in the query string to filter, to select things, which is doing a projection. We can do things like taking only the top 5, but you probably aren't going to be consuming things over the URL itself. What you're going to be doing is you're going to be using things like link or jQuery. So what we want to do inside of our application is set up another domain. Excuse me, another repository. And I'm not going to actually write all this out because it's actually a little bit of work. So we're just going to add a reference to this. And we're utilizing the repository infrastructure, or excuse me, interfaces that we already have. And we have a category repository. I need to go set the correct URL right here. Excuse me, the correct port right here. Let me get that port number back out. Okay, so I'm going to go to project repository. There were simpler ways to do this, by the way. Okay, so now we're using that repository. And if we look back, we have a reference, or we need to add a reference to the data services that we've built up. Actually, no, we don't, because we have a services in our service references. What's going on? Solution Explorer, service reference. We have a reference to AdventureWorks right here, because I've set this up previously. And we need to build a map, the proxies that are generated from our data service to our POCO models that we set up before. And the way I chose to do that was using AutoMapper. So I've used AutoMapper, said mapper.create, and I'm setting up our domain shopping cart items of our service shopping cart items. And then done it vice versa. This is very important because if you use something like Entity Framework for your models inside an MVC application, you would not be able to map them. The things generated from data services are proxies whenever you add a service reference. And whenever you use map things like AutoMapper, they do have problems with them, since the models that you generate from Entity Framework 1, or if you don't use Code First Entity Framework, are not plain C# objects. They are some specially built classes. That particular functionality. Okay, so now that we have this data service set up, now that we have our domain set up, what we want to do is we want to make our AdventureWorks program utilize that. So I go back over here. I am going to remove our reference to the domain.entity framework. And the only reason I'm even bothering adding a reference is because I needed to pull the DLL into the bin folder. This is using meth, so we actually have no actual references, period. But it's an easy way for me to have these drop, or for it to drop the DLL in there. And I'm running the wrong project. Let's right-click this, choose. So now we're dropping the data services domain model in there. We should be pulling, or excuse me, data services repositories in there. We should be pulling directly from the data services instead. This has allowed us to go from a straight layered application to an interior application using data services and using OData. Hey, it still works. You probably want to make sure that I'm not just fooling you. So let's put a breakpoint somewhere. I already created that. minute. Sorry, I loaded this up. Okay. Just to prove that we are going over to our product days, excuse me, our data services rather than our Entity Framework services. Or, excuse me, repositories. So, I have like 30 minutes left, and I'm going to, so the question I really have is should we use OData? I described a way that we can go into here with one of our applications, and the real question is whether you should use OData with that example. Really comes down to the fact that it's relational data, and it's very easy to use. The driving for, or the thing about that is, though, is that you're using something like a repository pattern. You could technically set up the work of any operation-based service as well. It just takes even more time to do so. I think that's what it really comes down to, actually, is just whether you're using resources and whether those resources represent relational data. If they represent relational data, then OData is a really good solution. There are many, many REST-based services out there, and those REST-based solutions fit their domain very well. And for the very classic Microsoft example, and the web-based thing is MVC, and you can easily set up even a service if you wanted to use an MVC. All you would need to do is set up a MVC application that returns XML rather than web pages. And that's available with an XML result class. So that's where I'm going to leave it at and start taking questions. Questions? Yes. Okay, so the question is whether using the OData in this way creates chatty services, instead of using message-based services, which may be less chatty. The answer to that is that you can make less chatty services, of course. However, using OData, you can expand into other entities. You don't have to pull back every entity at one, excuse me, entity one at a time. Let's go over to the OData demo. Let's go over to my data services. And I am pretty sure that I am actually expanding into multiple things inside of here. With the product, probably the category repository. No, I am not. Oh, yes, okay. So, such as right here. This is a very simple example. But whenever I'm pulling back the product categories, I'm automatically pulling back all the product subcategories along with it. So you can write them to be less chatty if you want to. Now, it is true that you could enforce very coarse-grained services yourself if you don't use OData. Whereas if you are using something like OData, a developer could be evil and use it as a very fine-grained service. Yes. You're asking about the identity framework with the OData services? So the best person to ask about that would be Vittorio, and he's actually here. to ask about federated identity, you can go into like a data service and implement any of your access or any of the access you want, since it is a web application. You can control all that, and that's really the whole point of making any REST-based service. In actuality, is that you should be leaning on the infrastructure that is provided by web servers, by other things, rather than baking it all into the service itself. I do not have any particular examples or know of any particular examples of using OData with WIF or Windows Identity Foundation. However, I would not be surprised if that's not out there, because that seems like a perfect direction to go with it. So ask Vittorio, or I'll ask Vittorio and post it up on my Twitter feed, which is at CodeFooGuru. Okay, so like I said, I really intend this to be a discussion, and I really want some questions, because so we can, you know, so I can figure out where some of your pain points are with OData, if you're using OData, or maybe you've been on the edge, whether you should ever go operation-based or go with a resource-based type of service. I've come from an organization before, an insurance-based organization, where everything was operation-based, even things that were very obviously resource-based. You know, and the whole problem there was just lack of knowledge that this type of infrastructure existed, that sometimes you can model things based upon the resources they are. And the best way that you can come across modeling a resource or determining whether something is a resource or not is to see if you're using that particular name over and over, or if you're passing a particular object into an operation in your services. And if you do that type of analysis, you will find whether you're using resources or not, and whether it should be based or broken out into resource-based services rather than operation-based services. Yes. Do I see an uptake in the adoption of OData as a standard? So I should mention that OData is not actually, I don't believe it's actually a standard at the moment. It's released with the Open Promise Specification, or Open Specification Promise at the moment. So Microsoft is saying that we're working on making this being a specification or open specification, and we will keep it as open as possible. As far as the adoption goes, the adoption is, to me, it seems to be growing dramatically. There's another session, I'm not sure if it's at this conference, but I believe you can catch them at Mix. There was a session called OData Everywhere. And really, because of the way OData works, the ability to utilize it with, or to, the ability to query things over URLs, makes it easy to use with devices, with Windows Phone 7 devices, with any type of mobile device. It makes it easy to use with anything. If I have a Windows Phone 7 device or any type of mobile device, the web is so ubiquitous, it's easy for me to go across that to get data rather than have it open up a special port and go get data off of some database somewhere. So I believe that whereas OData isn't perfect for every solution, I believe that it will start filling the need where it fits. I mean, it'll start being where it needs to be. And so far, I've seen some similar competitors, but I haven't seen anything that provides the features or ease of use that OData provides. Yes. Sorry, it's hard for me to see because I have lights shining right in my eye.
Some of the optimizations that simply reworked the price are not getting through to
some of the optimizations that any framework applies aren't getting through to the data services? Okay, so, wow, I could almost show what you're talking about, except for the fact I don't believe that it's actually, well, I almost say I don't believe it's actually a problem. However, okay, so let me repeat what you said so everyone hears it, because I just realized I have a mic. You're saying that whenever you're going through data services that you aren't getting the optimizations that any of the framework provides. Okay, so you see a serious degradation in performance, and you're not sure whether it's due to the optimization or whether it's lack of optimizations or something else. Well, first of all, you are going across a wire. That's always important to keep in mind for any situation, that because you're a connected system now, that you're going to have less performance than if you were an integrated system. The thing about whether you are seeing a performance degradation due to optimization is that data services are automatically going to start shifting things around on the URL. If you are using it with like link, I'm not sure how you are using it with link, it will start shifting the URL or the URI around the query string. And when it does that, it doesn't actually affect anything on the other end if you're using any framework, because any framework is going to get that and it's going to optimize it as best as it can. And if you are then plugged to SQL Server, SQL Server is going to try to optimize it as best as it can. That could be a problem simply because there could be a conflict between the optimizations. However, I've heard there's been a lot of improvements on that front. Now, if you profile SQL Server, you'll sometimes see these crazy queries come across from any framework. You know what I'm talking about. The thing you may find, those crazy queries are probably better than the queries you wrote. I mean, as far as performance goes. You may not be able to read them, but... Some queries, well, I'm sorry? Some queries speed up when you use data service. Sometimes you'll see many queries. That could be due to it trying to improve performance, or excuse me, execution plan on the SQL Server. Rather than creating multiple execution plans and storing those. I'm not a SQL expert, so I can't really tell you. But that could very well be. I would expect that it would probably do that if it would increase performance. And I'm not so certain that the performance or that the engine is, perfect. I mean, it's never going to be perfect, right? But I think it's pretty good right now, particularly compared to the way it was back in EF1. Yes. Okay, so that is a common question about doing updates with transactions. I believe that is one place where you're probably going to have to use something like an orchestration, build an orchestration. You can't use pure OData that I'm aware of and build a transaction into it. That won't happen. So as I said, whenever you're dealing with multiple entities, that's probably where your orchestration fits in, or when you're dealing with update multiple resources, period, or any types of interactions between multiple resources. Because you cannot flow your transactions through the services, you said? So you had to compensate in some way? That's probably true. I believe there's some space for improvement there. Yeah. Okay, so we have 15 minutes left. What's that? Okay, ow, what about what? Caching. So, caching on ODATA. I'm not sure if there's any solution built into the data services, but that is definitely not outside the realm. I mean, that's ODATA is simply a protocol for transmitting data. So, implementing a caching portion to that is actually no problem. In fact, you could probably easily write that into a WCF data service as well. So, again, that's one of those things I'm not sure of an out-of-the-box solution, but it's probably not too hard to implement. And that's another thing that I would probably check out the WCF data services toolkit. If that, something like that's not, it's actually really meant for building out data services from different resources. But since it was originally intended to be the ODATA contrib, I would expect to see things pop up into there or to contribute things into there. Okay, is there any more? I can't see. Yes, sir. So you're asking me about applying a version to a resource. I believe that would be, I believe that is like a different type of concept as from, oh, wait a second. I need to think about that a little bit differently. Because you're talking about versioning as far as like the service versioning goes, rather than like, well, that's almost the same thing because the operation would change. Where in this case, the actual resource would change. The thing that would be different in this case would be the EDMX, the metadata that's available. I'm not aware of different versioning capabilities to that EDMX at the moment. That's probably something that would be available in a future version of the protocol. But, of course, it's something I'm just not aware of. So it probably doesn't exist at the moment because it's really hard to imagine how it would exist. I think whenever I see people release different versions of a data service at the moment, they're releasing them on different URLs, which, of course, is not really, it's probably not something you want to do, but when you're talking about like a REST-based service, it's really hard to do it another way because you're basically saying that my resources are completely different now. I'm moving them around. The HTTP way of doing that is to provide permanent redirects or just add the extra data to the resource because URL is the resource. You're pulling back a representation of the resource. That XML you saw on the screen, that's not the resource. That's a representation of the resource. That's why it's called representational state transfer. So I think the paradigm is a little bit different. So it may be a little difficult to implement without compromising the integrity of the REST nature of the service. Now, of course, there are people who are arguing right now that, hey, ODATA isn't really REST. So I believe that it's RESTful enough. And it's probably about the best solution for getting REST and getting queries built into REST that there is. Okay, so is there anything else from anyone? All right, guys, I'm going to wrap it up and get to my next session, which starts in a few more minutes then. I know we are shutting it down a little bit early, but you're welcome to catch me in the hall and ask me any more questions. Thank you, everyone.